Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Sherritt International Corporation second quarter 2016 results release conference call and webcast. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. If anyone has any difficulties hearing the conference, please press star followed by zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded today, Tuesday, July 26, 2016, at 10:00 A.M. Eastern Time. I will now turn the conference over to Ms. Flora Wood, Director of Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Ron. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for dialing in. I'd like to remind everybody that the presentation is on our website. The call is being recorded, and there will be an archive afterwards. The forward-looking statements, which apply to everything we say, both in the presentation and in the Q&A, are on slide two of the presentation. I would now like to hand over to David Pathe, President and CEO.
Okay. Thank you, Flora, and good morning, everyone. Well, what we thought we'd do today is Steve and Dean are both here with me, so I was going to have Steve first touch on a few operational highlights. Dean will then follow Steve and speak to a few financial and accounting matters and highlight a few things and then some of the changes in the disclosure in our MD&A. And then I'll come back at the end and talk a little bit about nickel market and just highlight a few other things from the quarter. And then we'll take your questions. So with that, Steve, you're up.
Okay. Thanks, Dave, and good morning, everybody. I would like to highlight the picture on slide three representing our 2015 sustainability report, which we'll be releasing in early August online at sustainability.sherritt.com. This will be our first report that aligns with the Global Reporting Initiative's G4 reporting requirements. I encourage all interested investors to visit the site and contact us with any questions or feedback. On safety across the operations, we continued our intense safety program that will ultimately ensure all people go home safely every day. We had no fatalities, and of particular note is the fact that Embatovy has gone over 12 million person-hours without a lost-time injury. Turning to slide four, Moa's production of 4,145 tons of finished nickel in Q2 was an increase over last year, with last year's quarter being affected by a major shutdown. In comparison to the first quarter, it's not as favorable due to the annual shutdown, which is held in that quarter. In the first quarter report, we talked about mixed sulfide production being lower because of heavy rainfall, which prevented us from accessing some of the more favorable mining areas. We have been compensating for that by adding third-party feed, which in general tends to be more cobalt-rich. Mixed sulfide production was somewhat better than it was last quarter but continues to be impacted by slurry preparation plant reliability and ore quality issues. Actions are underway to address both issues, with improved mixed sulfide production levels forecasted for the remainder of the year. At Embatovy, our guidance has been reduced to a range of 42,000-45,000 tons of finished nickel and 2,900-3,300 tons of finished cobalt for the year. In our press release, we also provided our estimated July production of 1,500 tons as the rescheduled shutdown impacted June and July production. The shutdown lasted 19 days, but we came back online in a staged process, with acid supply being the last to turn to normal. Some of you have been asking what got done in the Embatovy shutdown. The most important activity was the statutory inspections of the pressure vessels, which are required every 3 years at the air separation unit and hydrogen plant. Other work to improve reliability of the assets was completed. Average reference prices for both nickel and cobalt improved in the quarter, although average realized prices in Canadian dollars were down marginally due to the Canadian dollar average exchange rate in Q2 over Q1. Since quarter end, we have seen further price strengthening in both metals, which Dave will cover later. Now on to slide five. Oil and gas production has held up better than expected so far this year out of our Cuban operations, with successful workover activity in the quarter. We're still running at 16,200 barrels per day on a gross working interest basis. This is well above our guidance level for the year, and we've increased guidance to 15,000 barrels per day. Unit operating costs also benefited from the increased volumes. On a net working interest basis in Cuba, we had production of 9,933 barrels per day, again, reflecting the timing of cost recoveries and generally higher cost recovery when prices are low. Last quarter, we talked about the spread between WTI and Gulf Coast Fuel Oil 6, which is still higher than normal, but narrowed a bit in the second quarter and on a spot basis looks like it's continuing to narrow. Power had another consistent quarter of electricity generation and sales. Having said all that, I'll turn it over to Dean.
Thanks, Steve, and good morning. I'd like to start by highlighting a couple disclosure changes we have introduced this quarter to better illustrate our debt structure and our outstanding investment in Battery. First, on our balance sheet, you'll notice that we separated non-recourse loans and borrowings from recourse loans, labeled as other loans and borrowings, to clarify which outstanding debt does have recourse to Sherritt's balance sheet and which does not. This change is also reflected in the consolidated financial position table on page 10 of the MD&A. The recourse debt of $878.8 million is comprised of our publicly traded debentures, the smaller Embattavi partner loan, which is $127.8 million at quarter end, and $45 million of borrowings on our revolving term credit facility. This is down around $81 million from year-end 2015, as we repaid debt and have a minor benefit from the strengthening of the Canadian dollar on the U.S. dollar-denominated Embattavi initial partner loan. The non-recourse loans and borrowings of approximately $1.3 billion is entirely comprised of the additional partner loans. The second item, which is pictured on slide 7, is from page 20 of the MD&A in the Embattavi section. This table shows the calculation of our net investment in Embattavi, beginning with the investment in an associate disclosure that you're used to on our balance sheet. We define our net investment in Embattavi as the investment in an associate plus the Embattavi subordinated loan receivable minus the non-recourse Embattavi additional partner loans. Calculated this way results in a net investment in Embattavi of $452.8 million. We also added a line to the bottom of the table showing debt to capital, where you see the effect of netting the non-recourse debt with the investment, resulting in a less leveraged non-GAAP balance sheet. Now I'll turn to our adjusted net loss of $116.1 million, or 39 cents per share, shown on slide 8. The main adjusting item in the quarter is the $12.6 million gain on the repurchase of debentures, where we bought back $30 million face value of the 2018 maturity at a discount. Another adjustment is the $2.7 million payment received related to the North Sea oil asset, which we sold last year, and which was structured to include deferred payments to us upon certain milestones. We also wrote off $7.7 million in non-capital tax loss carryforwards at MOA. Based on current and forecasted operating results, it is not probable that these tax loss carryforwards can be used to offset taxable income before their expiry. Slide 9 addresses the change in our cash balance since year-end 2015 to June 30th. In addition to going through this waterfall, I will mention a couple of unusual items affecting liquidity going forward. As you can see, our energy businesses and the Fort site generated positive operating cash flow adjusted for working capital changes. Note that for the MOA joint venture and Embattavi, only dividends and interest received from the joint ventures affect cash flow from operations. During the past 6 months, these flows have been immaterial. The main item affecting corporate cash flow is interest paid on the debentures. We paid almost $31 million of interest year to date. Going forward, our annual interest expense on the debentures will be $2.4 million less than prior years, to approximately $56 million per year, since the outstanding principal is now lower by $30 million. We also expended $62.4 million to reduce debt by $75 million, being $45 million repaid on our credit facilities, plus the purchase of $30 million of our debentures. There are a couple of other items affecting our liquidity that I would like to address in more detail. One is the negative working capital change of $26.7 million, largely related to fertilizer pre-sales in earlier quarters, resulting in deferred revenue, and higher overdue receivable balances in the Cuban oil business. The overdue receivables at oil and gas were approximately U.S. $50 million at the end of 2015 and have grown to U.S. $70.5 million at June 30th. We continue to work closely with the Cubans to reduce the outstanding receivables. And in July, we expect to receive payments totaling U.S. $6.3 million in our Cuban oil and gas business. The other item is that we only received a small amount of interest on the conditional sales agreement in power in the first half. Let me explain how cash paid to Sherritt from Energas is applied. First, cash is applied as reimbursement for costs incurred by Sherritt. It is like cost recovery in the oil business. Second, cash is applied as a repayment of interest on the CSA. And third, cash is applied as repayment of principal on the CSA. In the first half, Energas paid almost $29 million to Sherritt. Almost all of this amount was payment on receivables or cost recovery related to costs incurred by Sherritt in 2015 and current year pipeline construction. In 2015, these cost recovery payments were only $12.5 million in the first half. We anticipate the allocation of payments to shift in the second half of the year and forecast approximately $34 million in payments on CSA interest and principal in the second half. In July, we received $12.4 million, of which approximately $5 million is expected to be allocated to the CSA. I want to remind you that payments from Energas only affect Sherritt's consolidated cash balance by two-thirds, since one-third of Energas cash is already consolidated onto our balance sheet. Now, we'll mention a couple of factors that will affect our liquidity over the next couple of quarters. We expect cash transaction costs for the extension of the maturity dates on the debentures to be approximately $15 million in the third quarter. This amount includes cash consent fees, advisory fees, broker fees, and legal and other costs. Also, you will note from our outlook that our capital spending profile for the year is weighted towards the second half. That concludes my remarks, and I'll turn the call back to David.
All right. Thanks, Dean. So I want to just talk a little bit about the nickel market and our place in it, and then provide a little color, perhaps, on a few developments over the course of the quarter in relation to our strategic priorities for the year, and then we'll take your questions. So over this page on the next slide there, you'll see our net direct cash cost quarter by quarter plotted for the last couple of years. You've seen this graph before. This is updated with our net direct cash cost for Q2 at both MOA and Mbatabi. This reflects, again, the solid performance from the MOA joint venture that Steve talked about. And we did get the seasonal benefit of a larger fertilizer credit that helped us get back under that $3 mark. But that rate is very competitive. It puts us around the 27th percentile on the industry cost curve. And battery costs were up a bit on the production issues in the second quarter. Still better than the same quarter last year, despite the slightly lower production, and that's due in part to lower input commodity prices, but as well to a lot of the efficiencies that we've been able to implement in Abadabe over the last year. If we were producing and hitting our production targets that we had at the beginning of the year from Abadabe, we would be getting to a more and more competitive place in that direct cash cost perspective in Abadabe as well. We're hoping to see some of that start to materialize now in the second half of the year, now that we have the shutdown behind us. Over on the next slide, you see the Wood Mackenzie Q2 industry cost curve and R2 operations plotted against it. The 50th percentile of global production there is at 438. So as we've been pointing out for some time here, the 50th percentile of the production is still above the average price for the quarter. I think the reference price averaged just under $4 in the quarter, and the 50th percentile is at 438. That means that more than 50% of the world's nickel production is still underwater on a cash margin basis. Once again, never mind their financing costs or their other overheads. And we continue to believe that's just not a situation that's sustainable over the long term. We have seen a bit more strength in the nickel price in July, and so we've tried to highlight that a little bit on the next slide on page 13. You'll see there the spot nickel price for the last year or so plotted against a few moving averages. I think a lot of our nickel sales are really done off of monthly average pricing. In July, we're averaging about $4.60 a pound so far. That's up a little more than 15% from the $3.93 we averaged over the first 6 months of the year. That $4.60, though, is still not much over that 50th percentile, so we still believe we've got quite a ways to go before we have a nickel price that's sustainable over the long term. That, to put that current rally in perspective, you see on the chart there, we've plotted that for the spot nickel price for last year, and you can see how this current rally has a bit more strength to it than a couple earlier attempts in the earlier this year at rallying. We've now moved across all three of the moving averages there. We highlight in the box there in the corner the copper spot price for the last year against its 100-day or 200-day moving average. While it's crept up a bit as well, it hasn't been as robust as the move we've seen in the nickel price in the last few weeks. From our perspective, we continue to see strong demand for our own product. We're not having any trouble moving nickel, and our belief in the long-term fundamentals of the market remain unchanged in that it's for a sustainable nickel market. We continue to believe that nickel prices ultimately need to move higher, or supply-side responses need to occur, such that the majority of the production can make money, at least on a cash margin basis. We're seeing some signs of that now, potentially, but we continue to watch that and are encouraged, at least by what we're seeing happen so far this year. Lastly, on the last slide there you'll see our 2016 strategic priorities. You've seen this slide as well a few times. I'm just going to use this framework to touch on a few things, and then we'll take your questions. First, in our nickel business, Steve and Dean did make reference to our acid plant, and you would have seen our press release earlier this month on the acid plant that has now started up within the time frame we expected and within the budget, the previously announced budget. We are now seeing some acid production out of there. We expect to see some of the cost benefit of that new acid production over the course of the rest of this year, with the full benefit really being realized from the beginning of next year. On the oil business, we are now getting started in our Block 10 drilling. We hope to be spudding the first well on Block 10 as soon as next week, and that first drill hole should take about 3 months to complete, and then we'll be analyzing the results for a while after that, but we will have more news over the second half of the year as to how that initial drilling in Block 10 progresses. On the balance sheet, a couple things to cover. First, our proposed extension of our bond maturities is proceeding apace. We had our bondholder meeting yesterday and received quite compelling support across all three series of the bonds, and so now we expect that arrangement will get done this week. I believe we're in court tomorrow for final approval of the plan of arrangement that will actually implement the extension of our three maturity dates, and looking at a Friday closing such that by come Friday night, we won't face a maturity of our public debenture debt for over 5 years. Our first maturity will be in November 2021. Dean made reference to receivables, and I did want to just provide a little context for you on our Cuban oil receivables. They are up a bit from year-end. We're up about $20 million from where we were at the end of last year. However, we are only marginally above where the Cuban receivables were at this time last year. Those of you that have followed us for some years will have certainly seen our oil receivables from the Cubans fluctuate over time. They've been up and down over the years. We continue to work very closely with our Cuban partners. Elvin and I were last down there a couple of weeks ago, and we have seen some cash in July, both in the power business and the oil business. There's never been an issue with the Cubans as the amounts that come that are due. Never been a dispute as to what's owed, and we've never ultimately had an issue of collectability. But from a timing perspective, there's always been some fluctuation on that, and that looks as though that is set to continue. As I say, we continue to work closely with them, and I expect we'll certainly be looking to see those balances come down a bit between now and the end of the year. Lastly, Ambatovi. I want to just update you briefly on the various conversations that we've been talking about over the course of this year. We continue not to fund the cash calls to Ambatovi on the basis of our 40 for 12 issue, as we've talked about in the past. We do continue to own a 40% interest in the project, but with the way those non-recourse partner loans work and their entitlement to 70% of our future distributions from Ambatovi until those loans are repaid, it really leaves us, from our perspective, with a net 12% economic interest. And on that basis, we still can't justify funding at a 40% rate, and so we continue to talk to our partners about that issue. The focus for the last few weeks has been on trying to get our previously announced agreement in principle with the senior lenders to defer the Ambatovi project financing amortization schedule by 3 years. You'll recall that we did defer the June principal repayment in exchange for the project staying current on interest and had an agreement in principle to see 3 years of principal deferrals. With a deadline of August 5th to get that deal implemented in place. That is proceeding apace, and I expect that we'll see all that finalized, if not by August 5th, if shortly thereafter, and that should all come together, in which case the project itself would be relieved from the obligation to make principal repayments for 3 years starting from this past June. That's been the focus for the last few weeks, but we do continue to discuss with our partners as well then our 40 for 12 issue and what the capital structure and arrangements amongst the partners should look like further down. Despite all of the conversations that have been going on, our relationships with our partners will remain very strong and constructive, and as we get this deal with the lenders finalized, I'm hoping we'll see a bit more progress on and be able to tell you more over the course of the next few months as to what that actually is going to look like going forward. So that's where we stand at the moment, and that's what I wanted to talk about today. Now we'll take any questions you have. Ron, are you
there?
Thank
you. I sure am. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please signal by pressing *1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone today, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, please press *1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, please press *1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, please press the star followed by the 1. As a reminder, if you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off. And there are no questions at this time. Please continue.
All right, Dave, again. Well, thank you very much, everyone. I think we're missing a couple people. I think we conflict with the Freeport call this morning. So, anyway, we are around. Flora and Dean, Steve, and I are around this week. If there are any questions that come up over the course of the week, by all means, give us a shout. Otherwise, we'll look to speak to you soon, and we'll talk to you after the third quarter.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect your lines.